Welcome, everybody. So today, my goal is to finish Perek Yud Gimel. Only three shiurim only. And I'm really excited about this shiur. Now, before we begin reading, I want to say that there really is so much more I could have done here with all the parallels that I've kind of been hinting at with the Yosef story and the Dina story. And there's even a lot in the Lavan-Yaakov story as well. We're going to see hints of all those things. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on it. Rav Amnon Bazak, so if you could just Google Bazak Shmuel, I'm sure it'd be the only thing that, and you can see his whole series of English shirim on the VBM. And I think they're also on HaTorah or something like that. So he has an amazing shir. So if you go to chapter 13, I think it's the second of his three shirim, where he just gives over all of the parallels. Hi, how are you? Hey. So he gives over all of the parallels between the stories, and reading his class, this is Rav Amnon Bazak, who has a whole series on Shmuel, and I use it as a resource a lot. So, hello, Ruth. Do you mind sharing? So, that's fine. So his shiur on all the parallels between the story we've been learning about Amnon and Tamar, the rape of Tamar, and the Yosef story and the Dina story is so well done that if I had done a shiur on it, I would have just given over his exact words, which isn't useful for anybody. So you can just read his words. Rav Bazak. Yeah, so his is amazing. Okay, so some of the commentaries offer a little bit of a review, the actual rape of Amnon to Tamar, which was awful and ugly and horrible. And now we are coming in right after the rape. We're going to repeat a pasuk we did last week. Before we actually read, I just want everyone to pay attention to the structure in the Hebrew. So we talk about this a lot every time it comes up. I started this in the middle of the parak to save space, but there are no paragraph breaks at all between the first pasuk and pasuk kaf bet, and then you can see the first pay there, and that is the entire narrative of Amnon's lovesickness for Tamar and the plan of how he's going to be alone with her, what she's going to make him these cakes, and then hit the actual rape. Once you finish that narrative and you have the aftermath of both of Avshalom and his plan to seek revenge on his brother Amnon for raping his sister, and David HaMelech's reaction, and the end of this story, of this sad story, you see it's really broken up into paragraphs. And that's always a sign of something, that there's, you know, a lot of, I think it's a sign of what it looks like a lot of disconnect and just like cut off endings and exactly what it looks like. So that's how I format it. I do a paragraph break in between each actual paragraph break in the text. And you can see, so 28 to 30 is its paragraph, 31 is its own paragraph. Anytime you see a samach or a pay, 32 to 34 is a paragraph, 33 is a paragraph, and then the final paragraph. Okay. So
what's the difference between the samach and the pay?
Okay, good. I'm glad you asked. I should actually format it to show you the difference, because that would be easy enough for me to do. So if you imagine the inside of a Torah scroll. So when you see the end of a line in the Torah scroll that has no more letters on it at all, that is a pay. That's represented in our printed editions by a pay, which stands for pitucha, open. So it's an open paragraph. The samach stands for situma, and for a sofer, it's the length of 9 Hebrew letters that would leave a break in the middle of a text. So, like when you talk about a parsha, most parshas end with a pei in the actual Torah scroll. There's a few notable exceptions. The most notable is before Parshat Vayechi, the last parsha in Bereishit, which doesn't have any break before it. And then there's all sorts of midrashim and things why that is, because it's really unusual. So there's a couple places where you'll have one of these breaks right in the middle of a pasuk. The most famous is in, is it Vayesh? I don't know why I'm forgetting the parsha, but it's when the pasuk says Reuven slept with Bilhah, Yaakov's.
Blank.
And then no end of the pasuk, but a blank space, and then it says Yaakov had 12 sons. So that's the most famous one. Okay. Okay. So Vayisna'eha Amnon sin agidolam od ki gedola sina asher sne'a me'ava asher aheva Vayomela Amnon kumi lefi. So after Amnon does this deed, he hates Tamar even more than the love that he had loved her. We talked about that last week. And he says to her, get up and go. Okay, he is just an awful human being. And you can't help but see the contrast between Amnon and, ironically, Shechem. Because Shechem rapes Dinah, but then he wants to take care of her, and he wants to do the right thing by her. And here Amnon rapes his sister, and we're going to just see him even more awful. And I feel like that's part of some of these parallels between the two stories, just to show how purely evil Amnon is. Okay, Tetzayim. Vatomer lo al odot hara'a hagdala hazot me'acheret asher asita imi l'shalcheni v'lo ava lishmala. So Tamar tries to reason with him, and she says, because of this bad thing, this horrible thing that you did with me to send me out, but he didn't want to listen to her. So, meaning, this would be even greater to send me out and not take responsibility. This is always a really, really difficult notion that we have to take our 21st century feminist hats off, that in ancient times, a woman would actually be better off marrying her rapist than sent out. And that is the Torah law, that he's obligated, if a man rapes a woman, a virgin, he's obligated to pay either, if the woman wants and the father wants, then he has to marry her. He can never divorce her. Or if they don't want, then he has to pay the father. So it's hard for us to understand, but I think we can kind of imagine, especially even in third world countries today, you can imagine that these women would be better off than, because what would be their alternative in this state? Prostituting themselves, you know? At least here she knows where her next meal is coming from. It's just awful to think of, but that's what the reality was. Okay. Yedzayin veikra et na'ro misharto. So what does Amnon do with this plea from Tamar? He calls to his servant, Vayomer shilchuna et zot me'alai hachutza una'ol hadalat acharaha. Send this from me and lock the door after her. I mean, you can't, it just gets worse and worse. Okay.
Is he sending her out of her own house? Is that
what? No, he's sending her out of his chambers. He raped her in his chambers.
Okay.
Yodchet ba'aleha ktonet pasim. Kiken tabashana benot hamelech habetulot m'ilim v'yotzeo tamasharto achutz v'na'al hadalat achareha. Okay, so now we have this seemingly non sequitur, that she was wearing this ketonet pasim, which should sound familiar to everybody. We usually translate it as a coat of many colors. It could be just some sort of special cloak that was had strips of fabric or something. We don't know exactly how to translate it. Actually, in the commentaries on Yosef, it says that it's an acronym referring to all of the horrors that Yosef endured. I'm not remembering all of them, but the pe is for Paro, and the mem is for the Midianites. I don't remember. Yod is for Yishma'elim, and I forgot what the Samach is for. But so she also endured a lot of tragedies as well. So it seems like people who wear this coat have to endure tragedies. Okay, and so, but this was a garment that the virgin daughters of the king would wear. And then it mentions a me'il, which is some other sort of, we usually translate me'il as a jacket. And don't worry, Malvim's going to explain what all these things are. And his servant put her outside and locked the door after her. We have a lot of servants carrying out dirty work for their masters in this story also.
Why does it say not a row?
Why is it what?
Why does it say not a row, the servant?
So it's Amnon's servant. It's his young man, his servant.
So it's just to point out his youth?
Yeah, it must be. Or Na'ar, actually, we actually saw this in the very beginning of Sefer Shmuel, that Shmuel was a Na'ar in the house of Eli, and a lot of people actually define Na'ar as some kind of apprentice or servant. It doesn't always have to mean a youth. Okay, Yotet. Vatikach tamar efer al rosha uktona tapasim asher aleha kra'a v'tasem yada al rosha v'tela chaloch v'zaka. So Tamar took dust or ashes and put it on her head, and this garment, the special garment that was on her, she tore it, and she placed her hand on her head, and she went walking and screaming. Okay, so let's look at the Malbim on these psukim. So it starts on page 3. Okay, so I just included a couple psukim from the Yosef story, just so you could see. So Tamar calls it a ra'ah hagadola, and Yosef also refers to the wife of Potiphar's indecent proposal as a ra'ah gadola. And then, of course, the ketonet pasim, just to remind you. Okay, so Malbim, his questions. Halo yadua sheyesh havdel ben ketonet l'me'il. There's a difference between a ketonet and a me'il. We see both of them with the Kohen Gadol, of course. Ve'ech patach be'ketonet v'seyam be'me'il. How come the pesukim open with the ketonet and end with the me'il? V'chazar lomar ve'et ketonet tapasim. And then it goes back to the ketonet tapasim.
Where are you?
Oh, sorry, page 3?
Yeah, but...
So it says Malbim.
Oh.
And you're cut, sorry. Oh. Okay. You see? Everybody sees
it? You're wrestling, not the first line.
You what?
I thought you read something different.
Oh, okay. So we just read the questions of the Malbim, and now we're on... The Malbim where it says the Dibor Matka, the quoted words from the Pasuk, Ve'aleha ketonet pasim. So she was wearing this garment. Yesh havdel ben ketonet uben me'il. So he says there's a difference between a ketonet and a me'il. She'a ketonet hu hatachton, ve'ha me'il yatfu bo milamala al kol habegadim. So the ketonet would be your undergarment, not necessarily, it could just be a dress. But the me'il, by definition, is something that you wrap yourself in. So that's why in modern day we call it a jacket. He uses ye'atzfu. So when men make the bracha on tzitzit or talit, it's lihitza'atef b'talit. And in modern Hebrew, an envelope is a ma'atefa, because it's enveloping. I like that word. Okay. So that's the difference. V'derech benot ha'melech ha'betulot la'atof me'il al ketonet hapasim shalamata. So the way these virgin girls of the daughters of the king would dress is they would always wear their ketonet hapasim, and on top of that they would wrap themselves in a me'il. U'bisha'at ma'aseh, but at the time of the incident of the rape, he'sir ma'aleha me'il ha'ayon v'lo lavshara ketonet hapasim. So Amnon removed from her the outer me'il jacket, and she was only wearing her ketonet hapasim. And when he kicked her out, she was not wrapped in her jacket. Rak ve'aleha ketonet tapasim. She only had her undergarment. Shehotzia bebeged hatochton. He made her go out with her undergarment. Hagam shekein tabashana benot ha'melech ha'betulot me'ilim. So the daughters of the king would wear these jackets. Ve'ein darkam letzeit beketonet. And it wasn't their way to go out with just one layer. Because despite all this, his servant put her outside, mufshetet mimi'il, disrobed from her jacket, ubzuya mikvoda, and completely embarrassed from her honor, dishonored, v'dichufa ke'echat ha'kadeshot, and she was pushed out like one of the, anybody know what a kadesha is? It's a fancy word for a prostitute. Like usually designated to some idolatrous temple, is called the Kadesha. Okay.
I think the first Tamar was called that.
Yes, exactly. She was first called the Zona, and then when Yehuda sends his friend out to look for her, it's a little bit more honorable that if he was with a Kadesha instead of a Zona, so that's how she's referred. Okay. So now the Radak. I decided, since I'm mostly using the Malbim, I put other commentaries indented instead of having to repeat the Malbim on the paper all the time. Okay, so the Radak comments on this Haloch V'Za'aka, and this is also going to be a little bit of a review from what we said last week. I liked how he put it in here, though. So Haloch, she went, V'Za'aka, and she yelled, that's in the past tense. So first he's going to give a grammatical explanation. Avar b'makom benoni. So it's in the past tense in place of I don't know enough about the Redux language, but I'm assuming just from the context that Benoni here means present tense, because Benoni means in between. So it's in the past tense that word za'aka, she screamed, instead of the present. Klomar, holechet v'zo'eket. And he's saying this is just a grammatical way to mean that she was continually screaming out. Shekach tergem Yonatan, and this is the way Yonatan, who translated into Aramaic, translated it as a continuous behavior in the Aramaic. Okay. V'amru rabbeinu zal, and our rabbi said, b'kavalah b'yadam, that they received through by way of Kabbalah, ki al otoma aseba otasha a gazru al yichud hapnuya, that it was because of this indecent act and at this exact time that they made a gezera on being alone with a single woman. The Torah law, we looked at this last week, might have just referred to being alone with a married woman, not your own wife. And this was added that even with a single woman, you couldn't be alone with her, which is how we observe the laws today of Yichud. Shamru, because they said, Benot Malachim, Kach, Benot Hedyot, Al-Chat, Kama, Bekama. If this could happen to the daughter of a king, all the more so a daughter of a regular person, Bitsnuot, Kach, Beprutzot, Al-Chat, Kama, Bekama. If it happened to a modest woman like Tamar, all the more so with a immodest woman. Amdu Beit Dino Shel David, the Beit Din of David stood up, V'gazru V'asru L'hityached Im Hapnuya. And they made a decree that it was forbidden to be alone with a single woman. The other thing that's comforting about this is knowing in the actual text David's passivity. So here it gives us a sense that he did actually try to do something to rectify the situation, even if he couldn't take back what actually happened, he could ensure that it wouldn't happen in the future. So we see some activity by David, which I think is really nice, especially given what we're going to see as we continue reading through. Okay.
Except he could have enforced what was in Devarim. He didn't, which probably causes Avshalom's actions afterwards.
Yeah, definitely. And we'll see why maybe not, I mean, why it was so difficult for David to do anything. And then, yeah, we'll see.
Have you mentioned, like, how how somebody would have the gall to rape a king's daughter?
So he's the king's son. And to remind everybody, he's the firstborn king's son.
So he gets to do it.
He doesn't get to. It was completely usher, and it was completely horrible. And the way the text is written, he is an awful human being. as opposed to the Shechem story, where the Torah is actually kind of neutral on Shechem. You know, like, it's interesting. That's what Rabbi Zak says in any case. It's just interesting to compare those stories and see, no, nobody likes him. And David also, from what we've said before that I don't think I've said enough, when he, after the act with Bathsheba, and he received the prophecy from Natan that his entire household would fall apart. So that's another reason why maybe he reacts in the non-reactive way he does. And if Avshalom hadn't continued in his rebellious actions, he may have actually been seen as a hero through this. And we're going to talk about David's complicated feelings towards Avshalom at the end. But thank you for asking that. Okay, so back into the text on page 1. So now we're missing some information. We don't know how Tamar got to her brother Avshalom, but somehow he got to Avshalom. She got to Avshalom. And just to remind you, Tamar and Avshalom are, by most accounts, full siblings. They have the same mother and father. Their mother was this Eshet Yifat Tohar, who was taken in time of war by David, who he married. Okay, so Vayomer Aleha Avshalom Achiha Ha'aminon Achicha Achich, sorry, haya imach, ve'ata achoti, hacharishi achich, hu al tashiti et libech ledavar hazeh, v'teshev tamar v'shomema beit Avshalom achiha. Okay, so he says a lot of things to her. So he calls Amnon ha'aminon. So if you just want to very quickly go to page 3, right after that radak we read, the second radak says ha'aminon is derech bizayon. So his name is Amnon. And we're going to go back to the text, I apologize. So we're just looking at that one line. Oh, no, we'll look at Malbim after. I translate, sorry. So Derech Bizayon, meaning like, did little Amnon do something to you? Like he's adding a letter to Amnon's name to as a way of mocking him. Okay. So, and a lot of commentaries say that, not just the Radak. And now my sister, he gives her instructions, Hachrishi, be silent. This is also a word describing Yaakov's reaction to the rape of Dina. He's your brother. Don't set your heart on it to speak about this, meaning like try to forget about it. And Tamar sat Vishomema, and she was desolate in the house of Avshalom, her brother. Just one little interesting thing as we come close to Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, I read from Robertson Sipora Heller this word shomema, that it might actually be the root of ashamnu. Asham usually we translate as guilty, but ashamnu, aleph is always a weird letter in a Hebrew root, and the shin mem, so we have become desolate through our behavior of not behaving properly. Just that we can have that extra thought when we, as we go into our yamim noraim tefillot. I found that really meaningful. We are desolate instead of just we are guilty. So, okay. Anyway, so now let's look at the Malbim. Page 3 on what does this all mean, these instructions from Avshalom to his sister. Okay, so Ha'aminun. Amar le shetishtok mitzad gimel ta'amim. So he's telling her to be quiet because of three reasons. Now, if you remember, sorry, Louis, but Tamar gave Amnon three reasons not to do this to her before he did it. So the first was for his own honor. The second one was for her honor. And the third was, I think, for the indecency of the act itself. So let's read. So, and he's making a parallel structure with Avshalom's reasons for her to be quiet. Okay, so im mitzad kvoda, so if it's for her honor, lo tia lavuz, she won't be an embarrassment. Ayude shehit yachta im ish, ki lo haya im zar, rak achich haya imach. She didn't seclude herself with some strange man, it was with her brother, so she can't be held guilty at fault for engaging in this behavior. It was her brother, and therefore her honor shouldn't be hurt by this. V'im mitzad kvodo hekrishi, and if you're going to be quiet because of his honor, achichahu, he's your brother. I don't know really why that fixes it, but that's what Malbim says. V'im mitzad hanvela ba'atzma, and if it's because of the act in and of itself, al tashiti at libech ledavar hazad, don't place your heart on this. Tov shetishkechi zot milibech, it's better if you forget about it. Kima shehaya haya, because what's done is done.
Easy
for him to say. On the other hand, he is going to wait a full 2 years and get his revenge. And it's very premeditated and planned out. And just to say on this note, and this is also from Rav Bazak, you really see the difference between Amnon and Avshalom. That Amnon could not, he had no patience whatsoever. He had this sickness, he needed it satisfied. Now, he didn't think anything through, and Avshalom is going to wait a full 2 years to bring his plan of revenge on his sister to fruition. Okay, so Vateshev, and you'll sit, Hine Tamar, Shaya Darkal Tayel Tamid, Tamar would go about all the time, Delismoach, Vilagil, Kibbonot Hamel, Chabatulot, she would be happy and joyous, as was the way of the daughters of the virgin daughters of the king, and now she has to sit and not go outside.
Yeah, I can answer the issue with regard to why it's the brother, because it's a scandal for the whole family.
Right. Yeah, that's true. That's a really good point. So
it also may be a reason why David doesn't do anything.
Yeah. He's had enough. He's had a lot of scandals that he's gotten through in his life. Okay. So back to our text, Pasuk Kaf Aleph. V'hamelech David shama et kol hadavrim ha'ela v'yichar lo me'od. So David heard these things and he was very pained. It's very interesting because you guys know enough Tanakh. When you see Vayichar, it's usually a little bit different, the wording. So the al-sheikh is going to comment on that.
Doesn't it usually mean angry?
Yeah, it's angry. So he was, vaychar'ach. And I think the preposition of to is not usually used. So, and he was angry to him. He was very angry to him. That's an unusual. The al-sheikh is going to comment. Okay, let's just finish this little paragraph, and then we'll go back to the commentary. V'lo diber Avshalom im Amnon l'meira ve'ad tov. So Avshalom did not speak with Amnon, either bad or good. We're going to see how they explain that. Ki sanei Avshalom et Amnon, because Avshalom hated Amnon, al devar asher ina et Tamar achato, because he tortured his sister Tamar. Okay, so let's go to the commentary. I have to say, I was actually disappointed at the lack of commentary on David's anger and his silence, that I wasn't able to find a lot of commentary. The Al-Sheikh made up for that. He's awesome. But first, let's see the Malbim. V'amalch David chara l'maod. So he was very angry. Ulam, however, lo hichicho al zeh. He did not rebuke him. V'kol zeh ore sinat Avshalom. And all of this awakened the anger of Avshalom even more. So he's, the Malbim's giving a good psychological explanation for how Avshalom was able to plan this and really take out this revenge to the extent that he did. Okay, Al-Sheikh. I think Al-Sheikh is a contemporary of Yosef Cairo, and I think he was a Kabbalist in Sfat. Forgot to check that, though. I think that's who he is. V'amelech David, lo amar v'ichar apo. So it doesn't use it in its usual sense of, as Tamar also said, that he got angry with his nose. That's actually in this week's Parsha. I just read a Rashi. So whatever it was for the Shlishi Torah reading, because I just read it last night. And because Rashi explains that anger causes, you get angry and how steam comes out of your nose. Okay, like, you know, picture a bull, like angry, snorting. Okay. Ki'im ve'ichar lo. Rather, it says, and he was angry to him. Behu ki chara al hanogea lo. This is because he was angry in terms of how it touched him. Ki beze yit orer v'yuskor b'im inyano im bat sheva. Because here again, he's reminded of the whole matter with bat sheva. Ki lo yivatzer militzane hador miledaber v'lomar she'amnon me'aviv lamad. And here we can just really feel David's pain. All the mockers of the generation. He wasn't protected from the mockers of the generation who were saying, Amnon learned from his father. Which is a little unfair that David was inappropriate and was wrong, but he behaved appropriately in the end. He did the right thing, so it's very sad. But David,
it's
really
a trigger for him.
It's a trigger, and also he can't say anything and not be called a hypocrite. Even though, you know, like, and sometimes you see that when a parent commits a certain action, maybe the children are even more likely to do it 10 times worse. So he really does have responsibility in this. Ve'alkein lo matzatov mishtika, and therefore David couldn't think of anything better to do than just being silent. And did I mentioned that Yaakov was silent in light of his daughter's rape, I'll say. Ve'avshalom natar ha'eva bilivo, and Avshalom guarded this hatred in his heart. Okay.
He guarded it toward his brother,
yeah,
but not toward his father.
Yeah, it doesn't seem that way.
No, the Malbim says that he was angry because of what his father didn't do. That,
yeah,
fueled his anger. So
yeah,
that's
exactly.
The Malbim.
Yeah, so it's just slightly different take on it from the Al-Sheikh. Okay, Velo Diber, so this is continuing in the Malbim, bottom page 3, that Avshalom didn't speak Tov ve'ad, Ra ve'ad Tov. Because that which his brother tortured his sister. Mirov sinato lo hichicho alza b'davarim ra'im al hi'inui. Because of the greatness of his hatred, Avshalom did not rebuke Amnon with bad words on this rape. She'az im hayam ochicho v'hayam efayso b'davarim haya sofo tov. Because if he had rebuked him and then they had made up with words, then the end would have been good. So he wanted to keep it in the state of ra, of bad. It's a Lavan Amar, and with Lavan it says, so again, these little hints to the story of Lavan. So an angel comes to Lavan in the middle of the night when he's chasing after Yaakov, who has just left with his wives and all his grandchildren to go back to Eretz Yisrael. This whole scenario is actually going to be relevant because when Avshalom does seek revenge, it's the time of the sheep shearing, which is a big festival, and the reason why Yaakov chose to leave at that moment was because Lavan was off at his sheep shearing festival. We also see a sheep shearing festival with the story of Yehuda and Tamar. And there was also a sheep shearing festival with Naval. So these were like festivals that people would go and shear their sheep, but they were also huge multi-day festivals. Okay, so Lavan is sleeping the night before he's about to overcome and take over Yaakov and the family. And Hashem comes to him as an angel and says, don't speak to him. Mitov ve'adra. So the opposite. Avshalom is ra ve'atov, and here it's mitov ve'adra. Kisham haya poteach behatov she'asayimo imasavev al hara she'shalem lo bebarcho. Because Lavan would have opened up with the good, all the good that Lavan had done for him, you know, like taking him in and making him work for 23 years, whatever it was, but Lavan thought it was good. And then it would ended with, and how did you repay me for all that great stuff I did? You fled from me with my family and stole my daughters from me. Aval, so that was the difference with Lavan. Aval misinato lo ratza klal ledaber mize, but out of Avshalom's hatred for Amnon, he didn't want to speak at all to him. Rak shamar mistama bilibo. He held his hatred in his heart. This word for hatred, mistama, is the same word that's used after Esav finds out that Yaakov is stolen his birthright. And again, there also, the pasuk tells us that Esav is also storing in his heart to seek revenge on his brother. Of course, that ends up good, and he doesn't. But so the Malvim here might be trying to bring that type of imagery up. So he guards his hatred in his heart, lehina came imanu le'et matzo, in order to seek revenge at an appropriate time. V'zeh hayagam ken siba shelo nizhar Amnon mimenu achar she'en dover alav davar. And this might also be why Amnon was willing to go with him, which we'll see, and he wasn't careful around him because he didn't speak to it about it. Lo David v'lo Avshalom, neither his father nor his brother, shechach et asher asah. He forgot what he did. Amnon, because it was no big deal to him. He's just so awful. Okay.
You know, there's an interesting parallel here between this and Yosef and his brothers.
Yeah?
It says in Bereishis that they stopped talking to Yosef.
Right. Yeah.
Because of their anger.
Yeah, that's a good one. Very good. Okay. Kaf Gimel, so back to our text. Vehi l'shnatayim yamim, so it was 2 years. Vehu gozizim la'avshalom b'baal chatzor asher im Ephraim. And it became the time for the sheep shearing for Avshalom in this area near Ephraim. Vehikra Avshalom l'chol b'nei hamelch. And Avshalom called to all the sons of the king. Kafdalet vayavo Avshalom el hamelch. And Avshalom came to the king. Vayomer hinei na gozizim la'avdecha. Yilech na hamelch ve'avadav im avdecha. So Avshalom went to his father, the king, and he said, behold, it's the sheep shearing time for your servant, meaning himself. Let the king come with me and his servants with your servant, with me. Let's all do it together. Kafei vayomer hamelech al Avshalom, al bini al na nilech kulanu. No, we won't go with you. Velo nichbad alecha, and we won't make it so heavy on you, because David knew he'd have to have his whole entourage with him, and he didn't want to burden Avshalom with that. Ve'yifratzbo, but Avshalom continued to ask him to come. Ve'lo aval alechet, ve'yivarachehu. But David, at that point, it wasn't just a matter of not wanting to burden Avshalom. He himself just didn't want to go, but he blessed him. Kafav ve'yomer Avshalom ve'lo yilechna itanu Amnon achi. So if you won't come, Abba, why don't you send your firstborn son as a replacement for you, the heir apparent? Ve'yomer lo hamelech. And the king says, why should he go with you? So he's a little wary. Kafzayin ve'yifratz bo Avshalom. So Avshalom begs again. Ve'yishlach oto et Amnon. Ve'et kol b'nei hamach. So he then sends, so David sends with him Amnon and all the sons of the king. I bolded that because there's a lot of shlichut with David that gets him into trouble. So if you remember with Bathsheba, I think the shorash shalach was repeated 7 times. I think it was a milat mancha, a light wort is what it's called in Germany when it becomes the theme. And it was all the sending. And there we kind of talked about how, therefore, everyone kind of knew about this because it would have been the gossip in the palace with all these messengers being sent out to make these arrangements between him and Bathsheba. He also sent Tamar to Amnon, and now he's sending Amnon to Avshalom. So it could be that rather than what we spoke about last time with Bathsheba, now seeing that word repeated and now seeing how he's basically sending his children to their deaths. Yeah, fate, that's a better word. You see how his sending messengers back and forth there impacted him.
Why did we need a special invitation for Amnon since he supposedly invited him with the king's sons in the earlier in the paragraph?
So I think it's to have this word, almost, to have this reminder of David sending people.
It could be that Amnon didn't want to go.
Yeah, that could be also. That could be also, definitely. Although Amnon seems too stupid to think. okay, so...
Well, since he thinks of himself so high and mighty, maybe he thought it was inappropriate for him to go.
Yeah.
Since David doesn't think it's inappropriate for him to go, maybe Amnon thought the same thing.
Maybe, yeah.
Are you saying that before when Avshalom wasn't speaking to him, he had no hint that Avshalom was annoyed with him? That's what the Malvim said.
Yeah, that's what the Malvim saying.
Right.
Yeah, and just seeing Amnon's behavior, you could imagine it. It doesn't seem so unrealistic.
Because from Avshalom's side, he was holding on to the anger, so it's surprising they didn't
show. Yeah. I remember once, my husband said something in front of his mother that I got really offended. This was years ago. And I had a hard time controlling my anger at certain points. But this time I didn't want to get into an argument in front of his mother, so I held on to it. And then that night when we went to sleep, I just started yelling at him. My husband was so unused to me, like, not reacting right away. This was, again, years ago. He was like, wow, you're a really good actress. He really thought that I had just let it roll off my back. So Amnon, in all his arrogance and stupidity, really could have, not comparing my husband to Amnon, God forbid. But it just came to me that sometimes you really think that people, oh, they forgot about it, and then you don't know what's going on inside their head. Or you'd like to think they forgot about it. Okay. So does everyone, by the way, have like 15 more minutes? Is that okay? So usually I go 45 minutes with this one. Okay, good. Because it's really good stuff at the end. Okay.
I can tell you're excited.
Yeah. Well, I didn't have such a good ending. And then this morning I was rereading all the notes and everything. And then I decided to go back to the Bar-Ilan city and see if there's anything more in the rest. So, okay. So, Kafchat. Vayitzav Avshalom et narav lemor. Re'una kitov lev amnon bayayin. So see when Amnon is going to have a good heart with wine. This might even remind us of Esther. Mm-hmm. And ironically, there's some similarities with Boaz and Ruth there too. I don't know what to make of that, but just thought I'd mention it. Ve'amarti aleichem haku et Amnon ve'hamitam oto al tira'u halo ki anochi tziviti etchem chizku ve'hayu livnei chayel. So Absalom commanded his servants, saying, see when Amnon has a good heart with wine, and I will say to you, go kill Amnon and kill him, and you will kill him. Don't be afraid, because I am commanding you, be strong and be b'nei chayel.
There are two problems with that.
Yeah?
Number one, why did he have to implore them in the first place? And number two, why did they do it? He cannot take responsibility for their avera. That's the halacha.
That's true. I don't know. I don't know. Servants of, like, the king or prince, there's, like, definitely some imbalance of power there.
Well, I can only assume because he's supposedly the crown prince, although he actually isn't.
Right.
That they're afraid to do anything.
Yeah, it could be. Also, Amnon's servants kicking Tamar up. He could have done something to make it better for her also. So we have a lot of servants who are just following orders.
But they're complicit and they're just as responsible as
exactly.
he is.
I just want to mention that in terms of Chayil, and I don't have anything deep to say about this, just to put in your head, because it's two in one thing, is also something used to describe Boaz and Ruth, Eshet Chayil, Shlomo HaMelech wrote about his mother. So I don't have anything deep to say to you, but there's something similar here about that. Okay. Kaftet ve'yasu nare Avshalom la'amnon kasher tziva Avshalom ve'yakimu kol b'nei HaMelech ve'yerkevu ish al pirdo. Bayanusu. So the servants of Avshalom did to Amnon as they were commanded by Avshalom. And all the sons of the Melech got up and they rode off each one on his mule and they ran away.
Because they thought it was a conspiracy to kill all of them.
Yes, they thought it was a conspiracy. All of them, we're going to see that in the Malbim, both with and also with David's reaction to this whole thing also. Vehi hema baderech, and they were on the way. So what rumor came to David, Lemor saying, Hika Avshalom et kol b'nei hamelech, v'lo notar mehem echad. So David hears that Avshalom killed every single one of his sons, and there was not one remaining.
Which means none of them remembered that he had something against Amnon in the first place.
Right. Yeah, you are absolutely right, Joel. Yeah. Okay, so let's just read some Malbim on that. Oh, no, we can't read it. We can't read it yet. We have to read about Yonadav. Okay. So, Lamed Aleph, Ve'yakam ha-melech ve'yikra et begadav ve'yishkav arza v'chol avadav nitzavim kru'ei begadim. So the king tore his clothing, which also is kind of sad that he didn't even tear his clothes for Tamar, and Tamar tore her own clothes, but... and he lied down on the ground, and all of his servants were standing with torn clothing. Okay, and there's a pause there, so I think the author wants you to consider this action in light of the lack of action above also. Okay, Lamed Bet. Vayan Yonadav. You remember our buddy Yonadav? You don't. But he was from last week, and he's the one who gave Amnon the advice to pretend he's sick in bed and that he needs Tamar to cook him a meal. And he seems at first glance pretty evil, like he's complicit in Amnon's rape of Tamar, but the Malbim explains it, that the what he told Amnon to say to his father David would give over the message to David that Amnon indeed was in love with his sister, but maybe there was a halachic way that they could actually get married, and that David should be aware of this and arrange the marriage, and everybody would live happily ever after. Okay, so Yonadav, according to the Malbim, was not complicit and had no intention for this outcome. And we're going to see, based on what he says here, that the Malbim probably has the right take. Okay, so what does he say? So, Yonadab ben Shima, Achi David. So, remind you, he is David's cousin. Vayomer al yomar Adoni et kol hanarim b'nei hamelech hemitu. Don't think that he killed all of the sons of David, right? Ki Amnon levado meit. Only Amnon died. Ki al pi Avshalom haita suma miyom anoto et tamar achoto. Because Avshalom has harbored this hatred towards Amnon since the day that he raped Tamar. Lama gimel ve'ata al yasem adoni hamelch el libo davar lemar kol b'nei hamelch meitiv ki im Amnon levado meit. And now you see how he feels about Amnon, because he says, and now, my lord king should not place on his heart this thing saying all the sons of the king died. It was just Amnon. So I think that makes it really clear that Yonadav also lost his love for Amnon after the act of rape. Okay, so now let's go into the Malbim. So Lamed Bet, the questions.
How did Yonadav know that it was in Avshalom's heart since Tamar's?
It seems like Yonadav actually is described as very smart when we first met him. And it seems like, and he also, like, he says to Amnon, why are you waking up so worn every morning? Like, he notices things, and he knows, he seems to have this psychological way of knowing people. So based on how he spoke to Amnon, it makes sense that he would know this as well, and the description of him being very smart. Okay, so Lamed Bet. Yesh po devarim kfulim. So the middle of page 4, where it says Lamed Bet HaShelet. So we have questions on the repetition of things. V'tchila amar et kol hana'arim b'nei ha-melech hemitu. So in the beginning, when David hears the news, I think it says that he killed all of the sons of the king. V'karkach amar kol b'nei ha-melech hemitu. And afterwards it says all the sons of the king died. Al yomar adoni, don't say my lord. Ki hashmua nisvava mitzad shemi shera'a shehargu et Amnon. Because this whole rumor came about because the one who saw that he killed that they killed Amnon, chashav she'Avshalom hargu kadei shelo yelo satan b'yerushat ha-melucha. So the witnesses also forgot about Tamar. And they think, why would Avshalom kill anybody to make way for his being the king? So if he's killing Amnon, of course he's going to kill all the other sons, so he has no competition for inheriting the kingship. V'dama shehu hadin, and this would be the law. Shelachin yachrit kol zera hamalucha, because otherwise the entire seed of the royal family would have been cut off. V'heshiv Yonadav, and Yonadav answers, al yomar adoni et kol hanarim b'nei hamelech hemitu. Don't think that he killed all of the sons. Ratzon lomar shelo yomar shehemitu kol hanarim mitzad shehem b'nei hamelech. V'shehaya kavanat Avshalom lachrit zera hamelech lo kein. So the wording there, in this double language that Yonadav says, was to explicitly take out of David's mind any notion that he was doing this in order to inherit the kingship. Ki rak Amnon levado mit. He only killed Amnon. V'lo mitam yerushat ha-melucha, not because of the kingship. Ki davar zeh hayta soma b'fi Avshalom. This was a hatred he was harboring. Mikvar, already, miyom anoto Tamar choto, from the time that he raped his sister, Lihina Kembo, to seek revenge on him.
So this rape was not a private affair. Everybody in the whole...
Yeah, but it seems like everyone else forgot about it. Mm. It's really sad. Okay, Lam Gimel, Beata.
They forgot about it because nothing happened from it.
Right, that's true.
So they assumed everything was fine.
Okay, so Yonadav, continuation of Yonadav's response. Hosif lemor ki adayin yesh lachshav she'agam she'avshal noratza larog et Amnon. So the repetition, the second time he says he didn't kill all of the sons, is because, okay, so now he's seeking revenge on Amnon, and he only wanted to kill Amnon. But what if all the brothers had then united against Avshalom, and there had been a war that Avshalom somehow won and killed all the other brothers? Okay, that's the scenario. Don't think all your sons died by way of this war, theoretical war. That's not what happened. Only Amnon died. It also takes to account that there really was no unity on the brothers, each one out for himself. Like, they had no, you know, once Amnon is killed, they all get on their donkeys and run off. Or not donkeys, mules. And I think there must be something significant about the fact that it's mules. I couldn't find anything. Okay, so now we are on Lama Dalet. Vayivrach Avshalom, vayisa hana'ar hatzofeh et einav, vayar vihine am rav hochim miderach hacharav mitzad hahar. So Avshalom flees, and then the young man, who I think is the king's young man, he raises his eyes and he sees that everyone is coming from the side of the mountain. Meaning all the sons of David are returning. The remaining sons. Lamed hei, vayomer Yonadav el hamelch. So Yonadav then says to the king, hinei b'nei hamelch bo, here your sons are coming. Kidvar avdecha kein haya, just like I said they would. Lamed va, vahi kekaloto l'daber. So when they stop talking, v'hine b'nei hamelch ba'u v'yis'u kulam b'yivku v'gam hamelch v'chol v'dav b'chu b'chi gadol ma'od. So they came, they all cried, and the king also and all his servants, everyone was crying a lot. Lam zayin, v'avshalom barach. So notice the repetition, Avshalom fleed again. V'yelech el Talmai ben Amihud melech Geshur.
His maternal grandfather.
Exactly. So he goes back to Geshur, his maternal grandfather. And now this is very interesting. Vayit Abel al Beno Kol Hayamim. Okay, so obviously the subject of this verse is Avshalom. And then we have no proper nouns. We only have pronouns. And he mourned for his son all of the days. So we're going to see that this could be David mourning for Absalom, fleeing and having no way to return.
What else could it be?
That he's mourning for Amnon, but Amnon's not mentioned here.
I forgot about that.
That's why, also, exactly. Okay. Lamedchet ve'Avshalom barach ve'yelech geshur ve'yi sham shalosh shanim. And again, Absalom fled, and he went to Geshur, and he was there for 3 years. So we have three times of Absalom fleeing. There is a shir I didn't have time to listen to, because I couldn't find it before, and I just found it this morning, I think. About these three fleeings. I think it's Rav Elchanan Samet. I'll listen to it. We're not meeting for a long time, and I'll let you know if there's anything interesting. I think he relates it to like three progressions of mourning.
Well, that's right. It says many years, but in Pasuk Lamed Tes, it said he became consoled over Amnon after 3 years.
So, well, that's the whole thing, that he was never consoled over Absalom. So Lamed Tet, Vatechal David HaMelech, Latzeit el Absalom. So this Vatichal is in the feminine. So you see in the translation, it has in brackets, and the soul of King David longed to go forth to Absalom. So this, most of the commentaries will say that this is very common, and it is very common in biblical grammar, that it will leave out the subject in this kind of situation. So Vatichal is feminine, but it's David who's yearning, and it's really David's soul. But we're going to see that there are other interpretations of that as well. So he yearned to go out to Absalom because he was comforted on Amnon that he died.
Explain that, please.
Yes, we're going to see, several different explanations. Okay. So first the Malvim, which, interestingly enough, because you all know how much I love the Malvim, this is why I spent an hour this morning doing more research, because I didn't like the Malvim. And I like the other things about it. Okay, so Vatichal David. Perish ha'efodi. I don't know who that is, the efodi. But it's his explanation. Sheshalosh shanim harishinim shehitabel David al beno ratzat David tamid latzeit el Avshalom. So the Malvim is saying he was mourning for Amnon, and he wanted always to go after Avshalom. Ratzon lamar latzeit lemilchama velekachto migashur vehinakem mimenu. He wanted to go out to war against Avshalom and to seek revenge on him. Ve'ata ma'acha ishto otamar kalta et David. So he has a completely different interpretation. So we said that that word... where was it? David, his soul. Sorry, Vatichal. Thank you. That Vatichal we said was yearned. So here it's interpreting it as ended or stopped. So the feminine here, this interpretation is saying was either Ma'acha, the mother of Avshalom and Tamar, or it was Tamar, that they stopped David, like Vayichal Lokim at Yom HaShvi, he stopped on the seventh day. Vatichal Poel Yotze, it's active. He Ka'al Man'at David, that they refrained David, Miletzeit El Avshalom LaHashivo VeHamito. They stopped David from going out after Avshalom to bring him back and to kill him. Ya'an Ra'ata Ki Necham Al Amnon. Once they saw that he was comforted on Amnon, Matzah Chayali Noah David Milirad Fo'od. Then they were able to completely stop, refrain David from chasing after him more. Okay, so the Malvim is painting this picture of David harboring anger and resentment to Avshalom and not being able to be comforted for many years on the killing of Amnon, and that he wanted to seek revenge. That doesn't sit right with me from everything else we've read about David and Amnon and Absalom, and everything we will read about the relationship of David and Absalom, and how even when Absalom is actively rebelling against his father and trying to take the kingship away, David is still concerned for the safety of his son. So I found these other explanations. Oh, this, the first one, it didn't come out. It's the Ralbag, Gersonides. Vatichal David Hamelch, Hu mita'am kesef ketam nichsefa v'gam kalta nafshi. So he's saying this is desired. V'hu chaser hamitzdaref v'haratzon bo v'techal nefesh David. And he gives the same explanation that it was the soul of David that desired. Latzeit el avshalom l'havio elav ki nichem al amnon ki met. So the Ralbag is making it sound like David desired to go after Avshalom to bring him back to him because he was no longer bothered by the death of Amnon. That makes a lot more sense to me. And then the Alshich was even better. Vatechal David, Ra'u Lasim Lev. It's important to pay attention. Ma inyan omro latzeit al Avshalom. What it says to go out to Avshalom. She'im hu latzeit David mi'iro lalechet alav el tal mimel kashur Loya ala aliv, because if that meant that David wanted to go out from his city to go to Talmi, the king of Geshur, that wouldn't have occurred to him. Achine kol ha-mefarshim po echad maskimim ki be'omro v'techal David hu ke'omro v'techal nefesh David. So everyone agrees that this is the soul of David desired. She'im lo kein lo hayala lomar v'techal l'shon nekeva, because otherwise techal wouldn't have been in feminine. Behu kipsukim rabim hachaserim teva. And this is like many psukim that I told you that are missing a word. And he gives examples. We'll skip those. Osera mitil fizach shav yomar v'techal nefesh tavi. Bechol kach gadla hataiva. Taiva is the first word, five lines up. Ad hayota keba'ala tzit mimenu el Avshalom. This desire was so great in David that he actually did want to go out to Avshalom. V'hatam ki nichem, and why does it say he was comforted? V'hu asher yadanu ki adam mitnachem al hamet v'lo al hachai. And this is what we know, that man is capable of being comforted on the death, but not on the dead, but not on the living. And we see this very clearly with Yaakov, that he was never able to be comforted on Yosef, because he never had any conclusive evidence of the death. Kemamram Zal, as the rabbis say, Alba Yama'in Lehitzach Nechem, exactly what I said, sorry, that he wasn't comforted, Yaakov, on Yosef. Zeyomar v'techel nefesh David kim'at, letzit bishvil Avshalom, that he so desired to go out after Avshalom. Ach nichem al Amnon, even like if he was comforted on Amnon, v'lama nichem al Amnon, v'lo he'adar Avshalom asher harago. Why was he comforted on Amnon and he didn't care anymore about Avshalom who killed him? Lizeh amar ki mate. That's why it says because he died. Lomar ki Amnon mate. Amnon died. Ve'al hamet adam nichem. And on a dead person one can be comforted. Masha'en ken al hachai, which is not true on the living person. Ve'al ken lo nichem al pridat Avshalom. And therefore he was never comforted on the separation of Avshalom. And it's hinting on like the going out of the soul, like somebody who doesn't have. So he's giving a reason for why the word nefesh is missing. It's because it, like a piece of David's soul is missing with Avshalom being so far away. So this explanation really speaks to David's love for Avshalom and his sympathy for Avshalom and understanding for Avshalom of what he did. Now, that's why I said before, if we just left Avshalom here, maybe there could have been a happily ever after. But again, we're carrying through the prophecy of Natan that David's whole family is going to fall apart. And we're going to see in a couple chapters Avshalom's active rebellion against his father to the point where he actually sleeps with his concubines. So he doesn't end up being so good. But for now, we can think of him as the poor, separated son from his father who loves him, who is just trying to do good by his sister, Tamar. Okay.